Greetings, genocidal homeboys, and welcome to Polecat Cast number 130. BJ Blazkowicz kills Nazis for social justice, where our stealthy polecats ferret out the best feels, funnies, and what the fucks to discuss slam bam badger style. Mind your spines for the cringe, hold on to your sides for the lulls, and keep your chemo at the ready for this cancer. Today's polecat panel consists of Max Derrett, Simpsons kin, and definitely not Woodstock, that bird from the Peanut Strip, even though they're both pretty freaking cool. I'm going to run out of yellow characters. I'm just letting you know now it's going to happen, and I'm not sure what I'm going to put in its place, because I'm not going to loop back around and do it over. I don't do that. Our polecat punster and pussycat punisher, Hannah, Dr. Randomer Cam, Britain, Panda, Puppet Master, and Rabid Long Range Rhetorician, and me, the Supreme Doge in Charge, with my trusty Doge whistle so I can transmit my suspected white supremacist messages to my secret patriarchal genocidal network. Today, we will be discussing the following topics. Yet more male feminist, social justice warrior, and staunch anti-gamergate hashtag resist dudes have been accused of sexual assault and misogyny. And like a self-fulfilling prophecy, they are also paraded around as evidence of rampant misogyny within geek culture itself. We will discuss the latest accusations against Andy Signore, I hope I'm not butchering that name, and Michael Hafford, and maybe we'll throw in a little bit of Weinstein in there to get a mention. But the irony train has not even left the station yet, because the Fearless Girl statue is back in the news. Turns out that while the statue was supposed to represent something-something girl power, something-something inequality, and something-something patriarchal toxic bulls, the very same company was made to address its own sexist pay practices, as women are being paid, or perhaps they earn, I know that sounds taboo, less than their male counterparts, as well as some of its minority employees. Can you taste the schadenfreude? On Friday, the Trump administration started to roll back the requirement that employers must pay for birth control as part of their health insurance packages. Sounds like he's taking away women's rights, doesn't it? Well, that's certainly what rags like HuffPo and the New York Times want you to believe, as they get their pussy hats into a bunch over it. Let's see if we can figure out if these journalists are right to panic. Lastly, with the new Wolfenstein game around the corner, the marketing campaigns surrounding the over-the-top World War II action title are using the current political climate to sell their game by using current slogans and memes to better bring attention to their product. But is Bethesda taking a position on this, like a real one, or are they just being good capitalists, which I guess is still taking a position if you think about it? And finally, our bonus story for the patron-only after show. Since I spent $15 on Hillary Clinton's new book, What Happened, I suppose I should try to get my money's worth by reading her newest foray into science fiction. Join me in the after show for some literary aids. Yes, I'm going to continue reading from the book because there's too much in there to laugh at and cringe at and maybe cry a bit on the inside. Anyway, if you'd like to participate in our after shows as either an audience member or a participant, please consider becoming a patron at www.patreon.com/honeybadgerradio. If you don't want to wake up one morning and find yourself unable to find our content because YouTube finally dropped the axe or guillotine on our channels, then go to badgerfeed.com. We're going to be moving to a digest format for podcasting, so if you're listening to this in audio format and still want to follow our uncut live streams, you will also be able to find those at badgerfeed.com. Just go to badgerfeed.com. It is going to be perhaps the best way to get all of our content. Now that I have done all of that, my entire spiel, I'm going to be handing the platform over to Max Derrett to read us the first story. I had to do that because, you see, since I'm a person of color, I have to get the platform first. Now, this Max is yellow, so he comes next in the hierarchy, and, you know, maybe we'll let Mike talk at some point. Max?
Wait, I thought yellow people were at the top of the hierarchy. Oh, no, wait, that's Asian.
No, Asians are not yellow.
I'm a different type of yellow person. Yeah, like Woodstock. Yes, he's cute and cuddly. So, quick question for my fellow panelists. If you put the descriptor of male feminist and anti-gamergator together, what do you get?
Sex offender.
That's right. Granted. Okay, granted. Look, the vast majority of anti-Gamergate...
And pro-pedophile advocate on occasion. Yes.
Every once in a while. Yeah. Just a little bit more often than we'd like. Now, look, the vast majority of anti-Gamergate male feminists, you know, those types of people, they're not sex offenders, but I think with the ever-growing list of felons, there is a greater chance you are a sex offender if you hold these two descriptors. Now, allow me to give you a couple of the most recent examples. The following is taken from a couple of reports on oneangrygamer.net. Thank you very much. Michael Hafford, former contributor to Rolling Stone, Playboy, and Vice, and fierce anti-Gamergate critic, is facing multiple rape accusations from various women. One woman, named Helena Donahue, posted pictures of herself on Twitter with multiple bruises on her collarbone, shoulder, and chin. She captioned the pictures with the following, quote, "Sucks men in media hate women yet write about feminism and masquerade as allies, but it's sadder this happens. 2015, I screamed at my own reflection." Other women claimed such acts like being choked until she passed out and then punched in her face, as well as forcing a woman to do cocaine during sex. In another story, on top of this, Andy Signore, formerly of Screen Junkies and Defy Media, has been fired from his position after, you guessed it, several sexual misconduct allegations. One such instance included making jokes about masturbating to pictures of a coworker in her underwear, and then inviting her over to his place to do it in person. Oh my God, that's... God, okay.
Was it Allison Rapp? No, she worked at Nintendo. But maybe she got a job in journalism, because I see that there's a lot of deviance in those fields these days.
Quote-unquote journalism.
Yeah.
Dr. Evil quotes. Okay, so, you know, Signore has expressed feminist sentiments and anti-Gamergate sentiments, although lesser so in terms of anti-Gamergate, although we know his position. For example, in an honest trailer for the movie Wreck-It Ralph, which is a brand of video that Screen Junkies produces, Andy Signore wrote that the character of Sergeant Calhoun, a butch female soldier that was in that movie, was, quote, "Gamergate's worst nightmare." As well, when somebody asked him on Twitter if he would rather vote for Hillary and throw Western civilization away, Signore said the following, quote, "Over gross misogyny? Yes. Believe it or not, Robert, women have rights and you can't force yourself on them."
Speaking of honest trailers.
Yeah, no. Honest resumes. Michael Hafford and Andy Signore are just the latest in a long line of anti-Gamergate male feminists who are being accused of or being convicted of sexual misconduct. They will now join the likes of Matt Hickey, Devin Faraci, Stuart Campbell, Juan Thompson, Jamie Kilstein, Sun Patel, Nick Robinson, Joss Whedon, Christopher John Goldberg, and Hannibal the Victor. Now, for the last time, what is it with you people in committing actual, literal sexual felonies? I mean, you might want to work on that?
Well, I want to say something real quick about this guy's, the accusations levied against Michael Hafford. I know that this woman uploaded photos of herself with bruises and stuff, but that is not necessarily evidence that he did anything. That's just a woman uploading photos of bruises, or what appear to be bruises, on her body. So my question is, has he been convicted of anything? Is he guilty of anything? Or is this sort of like ongoing, and at this stage we're just kind of discussing the allegations?
Well, at the moment, he's been brought before the court, and apparently there's enough evidence to actually bring forward a trial, even though this happened 2 years ago.
Brian's got a good point. It's important to maintain standards of due process, and it's possible for somebody to post injuries and claim they came from someplace they didn't come from. And I've seen somebody walk into court with bruises that were either fake or were created by another individual besides the one that she was accusing, and they were created too recently. They were too fresh to have been from the incident that she was accusing, because they were fresh bruises, but the incident was like 13 days old, And you can really tell the difference. So,
always keep a skeptical state of mind whenever it comes to this sort of thing. But in these particular cases, based on the research that I'd done, it seemed like there was enough evidence accumulated to determine that, hey, there's actually something that we can go on here. Yeah.
And that's what I would look for. I would look for things like, are these accusations about a recent event? Is there a trail? People in the chat keep saying I'm coming. I should be aware of that. But anyway, no, this material is not that big of a turn on. Sorry. This is a situation where it looks like there's a little more documentation, isn't there? I've seen people talking about it. I haven't actually seen the documentation itself.
In respect to, it seems more so the case with Andy Signore, because there's been a lot of, it doesn't seem like this was a planned thing. It seemed that it just happened spontaneously, and there's actual evidence of people going to Screen Junkies and complaining about the guy, but they're trying to protect him and protect the Defy Media brand. So it seems that it's not just he said, she said sort of thing. It actually seems like there's a lot to go on. And yeah, it actually seems like our skepticism isn't really particularly warranted in these cases. More so with Andy Signore, but nevertheless.
So that's what I thought. So this is this is a situation to remain skeptical, but it's still, there has been so much of a pattern of this happening with this group that it's not a surprise, and it's not going to be a big surprise if everything is 100 ends up being 100% confirmed again.
Yeah, the thing is, I can speak positively to what Hannah just said, because look, I used to be a stereotypical male feminist before I, like everybody here, I had my red pill moment. And when you're in that state of mind, a significant portion of why you advocate for that, like feminism in terms of the third wave brand, on the one side, it is because you're genuinely trying to be nice and you also care, but it's also because you're trying to virtue signal to women in order to get romantic brownie points. And thankfully, I don't do that anymore. And it makes sense that for these men impossible, these types of men, that this sort of thing happens more often. Look, I just read to you 12 different names with all differing variations of perverse behavior. So there's something there. Even if some of these accusations are incorrect, I believe that even with just those 12 names, even if like three or four of them are wrong, I think that based on evidence that has accumulated, and also just using rational, logical discourse within your mind, just to come to a conclusion about why people would do this, it makes sense. Mike, you eating dinner or something?
Oh, I can almost hear you.
No, I'm trying to. Yeah, sorry. I'm usually. I'll mute now.
It sounds like you're sharpening a knife, like you're about to go kill some fools.
Yeah. that's just Mike sharpening his wit.
Never
stops.
Mike, I told you, I promise you, I'll get you the money by Friday, okay? Give me some time.
Okay, so I'm still only coming out.
Mono?
Yeah, I still have mono, but I wanted to bring something else up, and I'm sorry, guys. I'm going through my manual to find out how to fix that. I know that some people have sent me private messages. I'll look at them in a second. I'm going through the manual. But the thing I wanted to bring up is, one of the things that I find that's interesting about this situation is, for better or for worse, when these guys that are male feminists or social justice warriors or whatever end up getting accused of sexual misconduct or sexual assault, abuse, rape, whatever, it actually ends up working out in favor of feminism itself, because they get to say that the people who we oppose are terrible, even though we don't have evidence of it. But, they say terrible, terrible things like, I wouldn't even rape you, which we all know is unforgivable offenses. And then there are people who are supposed to be their allies that are being accused. And they say, but look, even the men that are the ones that we trust the most, that we are closest to, that are supposedly have our back, are also terrible. So this is paraded around as evidence that there's something wrong with all men, because even the guys who are our allies, you know, commit these terrible crimes. And the irony of this is that a lot of these guys, if they wanted to be, or if they allowed this discussion to expand beyond their echo chamber and they were to reach out to MRAs or whatever, they would find out that actually we want to help them. But, you know, we want to protect them from this stuff, because I think that if you're involved with this social justice feminist stuff, you're going to attract damaged people, because there's a lot of damaged people involved in that. And the kinds of people that you're going to attract, and I don't just mean sexually, I just mean like as friends in your circle and all that, these are people who are just far more likely to end up either doing something that they regret and then blaming you for it because they're really good at playing the victim, or just, you know, levying accusations at you for no reason because they're damaged people, because these are the kinds of circles that they travel in, you know? So it's just like this self-fulfilling prophecy of men who are in trouble for whatever reason, that think that the answer to their problems that they haven't been able to quite figure out lies with being an ally to women, being a social justice warrior, looking out for the little guy, because they have this male guilt and this white guilt and everything, and they go over there to do that, and they become loud proponents for it, and then they get accused of something, which of course they have to, like, internalize and actually take, you know, they have to bear that, like, kind of like, what's the name of the guy, Aaron Gioni, the guy who, yeah, so he did that, right? Like, even after what happened with Zoe Quinn, he basically was like, yeah, but, you know, it's my fault too, you know, like, I'm just as damaged, or, you know, close to being as damaged as Zoe Quinn is, and she is, you know, a victim in many ways, and so he was apologetic, he was remorseful for shit that he shouldn't have to apologize for. So that was the one thing that I observed, and I don't want to, you know, like, talk too much because of the microphone situation, which I'm working on, but you see, that was the other thing that I really wanted to bring up. And now, also, this applies to, is it Harvey Weinstein from the Weinstein Company?
Yeah.
Same story. Like, I, you know, we know that Hollywood has problems where, you know, there's, like, a lot of, like, you know, creepy pedophilic shit going on, and a lot of people, like, you know, the casting couch thing, and a lot of, like, just sexual shit going on that's pretty deviant behavior that a lot of times people are carrying with them. There's a lot of that goes on there, but I still maintain, unless there's evidence that comes out, that I would protect Harvey Weinstein and anybody else who there's no evidence against, in the same way that I stand up for Bill Cosby, until there is evidence. We have to also consider that even in these subcultures within Hollywood, within journalism, within, you know, whatever creative industry, there are damaged men, but there are also damaged women. And you got to, like, you know, you got to hold them accountable, you know, in an equal fashion.
One thing in respect to Harvey Weinstein, he is 100% guilty. There was an audio file that I just came across right before we did the show that was released on Twitter, verified that it was Harvey Weinstein. And in it, there was a conversation between him and a drunk woman. And there was an exchange of words where it pretty much admitted to grabbing the woman's breasts in the conversation that he was having with her.
Sure. So he's yeah, I know about that. So he's guilty in that specific case. But there are multiple women that's come forward, right?
Yeah, and, but, I mean, like, just generally in terms of him sexually harassing women, that's definite 100% proof, and that's unacceptable.
Absolutely. I'm not giving him a pass, but what I'm saying is that a man could be guilty of some crimes, but then there are also opportunists that come in and say, oh, me too, you know. And the ironic thing is that for the longest time, no one spoke up. It's kind of like, you know, I'm not saying that he's innocent. What I'm saying is we have to be cautious and maintain that, you know, if he's guilty of stuff, then we hold him accountable for the stuff that he's actually guilty for. And just because there are a lot of people pointing fingers and suddenly coming out of the woodwork saying, I was also a victim, we can't consider those to automatically be true just because it's something that he clearly seems to be capable of doing. You know what I mean? And we just focus on what he actually has done or what we can actually prove. So, yeah, sure. I mean, I know about the recording, and I think it is deplorable, and, you know, obviously, he's resigned and shit and stepped down. And the penalties shouldn't end there. They should be whatever they need to be. And that's just the way it goes. But at the same time, I'm just saying, let's not assume that because he was found, either there was proof or evidence of one, wrongdoing, that all the other wrongdoings are valid. So, I mean, does that make sense? I'm trying to be reasonable. Yeah. I don't disagree. He's a piece of shit, but. I still want to try to stay. I don't want the emotional component of what's happening to override, the rational part. So when I say, this is what's going on. Same thing for Joss Whedon. People have, I don't know what the evidence is, but if it turns out, that this has happened, then.
He hasn't done anything illegal. He's just a piece of shit.
Yeah, well, but he was before I found out about this. To me, in my opinion, I was just like, look, shut up and direct movies. I just want to watch your movies. I don't want to hear about your fucking politics because I know there's some hypocritical shit in there somewhere. And when this came out, I was like, well, there it is. Even if it's, that's just how I see it. So
people like us, Brian, we can see that shit coming from a mile away.
Yeah.
We knew Joss Whedon was involved in some shit, especially if he's trying to have intellectual conversations with a woman like Anita Sarkeesian. Joss, you're an immeasurably talented piece of shit.
All right, so let me just check and see. Somebody sent me a meme. Oh, it's nothing. They're not actually. They were just telling me the thing that I already know. Okay, so I guess we'll go on to the next story. I won't do the reading because I'm still dealing with this this shit. So let's go ahead. Mike, do you mind reading the next story?
Can do which?
It's just religion, freedom of religion versus free birth control, is the second story.
Yep, can do.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, it's by Lindsay. Wicked. Thank you, Lindsay. Freedom of religion versus free birth control. On Friday, the Trump administration started rolling back the federal requirement that employers must include birth control in their health insurance plans, a mandate put in place by the Obama administration. The decision would allow employers claiming religious or moral objections to opt out of providing no-cost birth control to women. Washington State, Massachusetts, California, and the American Civil Liberties Union are suing the president. State Attorney General Bob Ferguson, who successfully sued to block Trump's initial travel ban earlier this year, says Trump's new policy violates the First Amendment. Ferguson argues the new rules will require individuals to bear the burden of religious beliefs that they may not share and could affect more than 1.5 million Washington workers and dependents who receive health coverage through an employer's self-funded plan. That is, if companies have objections to offering birth control benefits through their health plans. Ferguson says it also violates the equal protection requirements of the Fifth Amendment because it affects women but not men. Isn't it a benefit that women have birth control where men don't, so either losing the free birth control or giving men cost-free birth control would be equal anyway. Other fears coming from liberal advocacy groups are based in the idea that these new rules will lead to a slippery slope of discrimination funded by the federal government based on this religious opt-out. For example, religious charities or schools that receive federal funding could fire employees that become pregnant outside of marriage, marry a same-sex partner, or only hire those who share the same beliefs. Vanessa Gupta, a civil rights lawyer at the Justice Department during the Obama administration, is making the same claims, calling the new policy a direct attack on women's rights. As cited by the New York Times, she said, "The freedom of religion is a fundamental right, but it is not an absolute right. It cannot be used as a shield. To permit discrimination against LGBTQ Americans, just as federal courts denied the ability of employers to use their religious beliefs as a basis to discriminate against African Americans." The decision was welcomed by groups like the Little Sisters of the Poor, an order of Roman Catholic nuns who resisted the Obama administration mandate because it would make them morally complicit in grave sin. The White House Press Secretary, Sarah Sanders, said the new rules are legal. The president believes, quote, "The president believes that the freedom to practice one's faith is a fundamental right in this country, and I think all of us do. And that's all that today was about. Our federal government should always protect that right," end quote. she said, as cited by Fox.
Okay, before we go on, I want to clear up a few things. First of all, in a second to the last paragraph you just read, the people complaining that this would allow discrimination actually cited case law that would prevent this from facilitating discrimination in their complaint, which means it's already been decided, and they're lying because they already know that that will not facilitate any discrimination. That's the first thing. The second thing is receiving something that you want very badly, even if you consider it a need, receiving it at someone else's expense is not a fundamental right. And being given that by somebody who has a religious objection to funding it is not a fundamental right. The right to practice your religion or to choose not to practice a religion is a fundamental right, but not being able to extort someone else to pay for your stuff is not being forced to practice religion. So the idea that this is a religious discrimination against people to not buy them things is bullshit. And so before anybody comes out and makes this a Christian atheist thing, it's not. It's a feminist thing, and it's bullshit on another level as well. Birth control was given the unique status of a medication that was not only covered, even when it's elective, but it was covered without copay, and that was mandated. Now, if you were a diabetic and you had insulin requirement and you had to buy your insulin and your insurance company covers your insulin, you have a copay. If you have chronic pain and your chronic pain is so bad that in order for you to even be able to work, you have to take pain medicine every day and your insurance company covers that pain medicine, you have a copay. If you have asthma and you have to take an asthma drug, you have to take a steroid or some other drug to facilitate your breathing, and you're going to die if you don't take it, you have a copay. But if you're on birth control pills and you're on birth control pills because you want to have sex without getting pregnant or you want to regulate your periods, feminists think that if you have to have a copay, that's unique discrimination against women. That is not asking for equal treatment for women. That is asking for a unique benefit for women and calling it discrimination against women if women do not get something that is just for women and nobody else and unique from any other similar example. It's ridiculous. And there is no reason to look at this issue as a women's rights issue, as a religious discrimination issue against the employee, or even as a financial issue. Because frankly, women have their own capacity to go out and work and pay for their own shit, just like men. And there is no reason women shouldn't be accountable for their own pregnancy. So if you disagree with us on this, if you disagree with the idea of equal accountability and equal treatment in terms of insurance rights, you got to have some justification besides it's a women's rights issue, it's a religious issue, or it's discrimination against the employee, because they're pretty much bullshit. Yes.
Yes, sir.
Over here. Okay. I'm still working on it. I'm not sure that I fixed anything. So let me know, guys. I don't think anything's fixed yet, but I apologize. Well, the thing that I got from this is what is happening is not – so the narrative is the Trump administration is taking something away from women. Of course, that would be the narrative because it's the most effective way to get people to respond. Is to say he's a, you know, break. It's the Fifth Amendment and the First Amendment, I think, that are in danger or whatever. But what is happening here, as I understand it, is the same conundrum that we run into with the, you know, do you get the government to force a bakery to make a cake for people who's, you know, who you don't want to bake a cake to? Like, should companies be allowed to discriminate based on whatever? And I think that he's moving towards, he's basically freeing companies from having to pay for something. It's not that, or he's giving them the option. And the fact is, most companies, most corporations and businesses, they won't even take advantage of this, most likely. They'll just say, oh yeah, we will pay for your birth control. But what it's for is the few, like the Hobby Lobbies or whatever, that, you know, for them it is a religious issue. And I think that there is an important point to make. Is it's not about agreeing with organized religions, but if you force companies that don't share those beliefs to serve those customers, you will run into problems, big ones, with other groups, because the idea usually that comes out of the people who argue against it is, you know, fuck Christians, they're bigots, and, you know, they should serve gays, or they should take care of women, or whatever, right? It's usually the narrative that comes out. But what happens when a Muslim opens a business and a Jewish guy wants to buy something from there? Do you make the Muslim guy serve him? Like, that doesn't work within their whole progressive politics paradigm that they've set up. So giving people the freedom to choose, while I won't agree with the reasoning behind it, like if they said, well, I don't want to take care of group X because, you know, my religious beliefs or whatever, I would say, well, I don't think that's a wise business decision, and you're probably going to end up, you know, not seeing a tremendous amount of growth because people will take issue with it, in the same way that you have businesses that say, look, I don't care if you get birth control, I just don't want to pay for it. While I, you know, that may not end up serving them well in the long run in terms of them being a business, because a person could go and say, well, this company doesn't want to pay for my birth control, and then people will be like, well, I guess we're not going to shop there. But it's better to do it that way than to force them, because I think that that's needless government interference, and it's not good, because, you know, you can run into these problems I was talking about where you got to apply this across the board. So these people haven't thought this through. You know, they haven't thought about these. What if a Muslim bakery doesn't want to make a cake for a homosexual couple? What do you do? Who do you side with? Well, maybe they should just be allowed to discriminate. And then people just say, well, I'm not going to buy a cake from this company, you know? So, I mean, that's the one thing that, you know, again, I'm not saying I agree with the religion thing, but the fact is religion exists, and we can't, we just have to deal with that. And this is probably the best way to do so. So those are my thoughts.
Look, I agree with pretty much everything you guys are saying, but I will say just in sympathy with...
Oh, Max, you're breaking up a bit. I don't know why that
oh,
is.
Oh, I am?
Oh, you're fine now.
Oh, okay. I will say this. Like, I've heard arguments from my more feminist friends about getting birth control for women. And now on some health plans, I can understand why they might be upset, like, if men are getting medication like Viagra, even though, you know, like Viagra can be used for things other than stuff having to do with sexual reproduction, and they want to get birth control because that particular thing helps with other things aside from sexual reproduction. I understand that. But when it comes to focusing solely on that and not on other particular health benefits they can get under certain programs, it becomes a little bit iffy, and I don't understand why they focus so solely on this. I can only come up with the reason that Hannah cited, or Brian cited, which is just fuck Christians, are all bigots, that sort of thing.
Well, I got to point something out. The Viagra argument is a false equivalence. Okay. Viagra is always prescribed to treat a condition of medical dysfunction. It is not prescribed for any other reason. Anytime it's a condition of medical dysfunction if a man has a pattern of inability to obtain an erection. That's medical dysfunction. That's not that's not just a recreational thing. Your body isn't doing something it is supposed to do. The vast majority of the time, birth control is prescribed. It's not prescribed to treat a condition of medical dysfunction. It is prescribed to prevent a normal function. That makes it elective, not medically necessary. It's like a boob job or getting a nose job when you want your nose to look prettier, as opposed to getting a nose job because you have a deviated septum and it's causing you severe health problems.
It's also a blood thinner, and it actually serves as a purpose outside of, you know, boner. Yeah, boners.
Right. It's not just boner pills. It's also, and actually there are circumstances under which Viagra has been prescribed to women for circulatory issues, including some life-threatening ones. They actually give it in a much higher dose than they can safely give it to men. So it's a very much a false equivalence. There's no equivalent for men to birth control pills. And so feminists like stretch for things that are not equivalent and try to make them equivalent. And there is no place they can find that there's treatment for something that's not a medical need. That women don't get the same coverage. Like if they stretch to a vasectomy, the same coverage is given to getting your tubes tied. Those are an equivalent. So that's one issue. There was another thing I wanted to point out about this, and it had to do with the argument regarding LGBT, GLBT. I'm gonna stick with my point on that. I don't know if people remember me pointing out the gay rights movement, the men's gay rights movement existed for a long time, and they took all the lumps before feminists and lesbians jumped on the bandwagon. Regarding the issue with discrimination on the basis of sexuality, everybody brings up the cake case, and everybody treats the cake case as though a gay couple went in and asked for a cake to be baked and decorated and were told no. That's not what happened. They asked for a phrase to be put on the cake that the baker felt was against his religion to write. The baker offered to make them a cake without that phrase on it, and they refused. And that was what the lawsuit was over, forcing someone to say something that was against their religion. And so to me, it wasn't a discrimination issue in terms of gay rights. I don't think that morally or ethically you don't have that right. You don't have the right to force someone to say something that they are morally opposed to on the basis of their religious beliefs or for any other reason. But the court sided with them because they made it a gay rights issue. And now we have a situation where you can go in and force any baker to write something on any cake that they consider to be morally reprehensible. And it basically means that, you know, if you walk into Walmart and ask a Jewish person to write "Hitler did nothing wrong" on their cake, that court ruling should protect your right to force them to say that. And that's wrong. Now, in terms of not serving people, it's not really about that. They were willing to serve. They were simply not willing to say something that they didn't agree with. Yeah, and no, don't act on that idea. Somebody's in the chat, "Miss, a good idea." Yeah, I know. Don't go in and ask Jewish people to say Hitler did nothing wrong. That's cruel. But those are my two points there regarding the feminists constantly make false equivalents, arguments in terms of the birth control thing, and the bakery thing was quite mischaracterized and has been quite mischaracterized in public discussion. And people, if they really thought about the implications of that court case, they would be outraged that the ruling went down the way it did.
Looks like I'm still having problems. I don't know. I don't know if it's the microphone itself, which is a really nice microphone, and it was working, and you guys hear me in the stereo. So it's either that or it's something with the way Windows 10 is seeing it or something. I don't know. But, well, I agree with what you're saying, Hannah, about the, about it's, well, I know the story is about the wording on the cake, but it seems people tend to think of this story as a, you know, being forced to make a cake thing, but they didn't really have an issue with the cake. It was just the message. Well, and that makes sense because it's nonetheless, you know, we're still talking about pretty much the same idea, is making people, essentially forcing people to do labor they don't want to do for whatever reason. And nobody should have to do that. I know that my audio is still fucked. I'm sorry. Apparently there's a lot of buffering. If you're encountering buffering, try going to the Twitch stream. It seems to be far more stable. So... But, anyway, in any case, unless there are any final thoughts, I'm going to ask Max to read the next one. I can't do any readings because of my audio, and I don't want to piss people off.
Yes, so, sir. Okay. All right, Fearless Girl?
Yes, Fearless Girl. Right.
So, check this out, ladies and gentlemen. We say at the beginning of the show where you have to hold your sides to be prepared for the lulls. This is one of the stories where this is most appropriate. All right. We all remember the Fearless Girl statue. Right? That was put up in front of the Charging Bull statue on Wall Street. Feminists across the board celebrated Fearless Girl by drawing attention to women's unequal participation at Wall Street, as well as, quote-unquote, combating the patriarchy. However, in a twist of fate, State Street Corps, the company which commissioned the Fearless Girl statue, has faced allegations of pay disparity between its male and female workers. The U.S. Department of Labor's Federal Contract Compliance Program audited the firm near the end of 2012 from data between 2010 and 2011. This past March, the same month Fearless Girl was installed, the feds ordered the company to take corrective actions. What? The company paid $4.5 million in back pay and $500,000 in interest to around 300 women and 15 black employees. The pay disparity mainly dealt with those in similarly situated managerial or vice president level positions. Despite settling, State Street Corps maintains its innocence. The company in a statement said that State Street is committed to equal pay practices and evaluates on an ongoing basis our internal processes to be sure our compensation, hiring, and promotions programs are non-discriminatory. While we disagreed with the OFCCP's analysis and findings, we have cooperated fully with them and made a decision to bring the six-year-old matter to resolution and come forward. Okay, so I don't understand. How are they basically just saying, okay, even though, you know, we understand, like people like us understand that the pay gap is a myth, they're essentially ordering these people to pay women and black people more money despite the fact that the myth has been debunked and it's not, like, the way we think it is, or they think it is?
The things people do to keep the bullshit alive.
Yeah. This is fucking... Wow.
And I have to wonder if it's still an earnings gap. Guys, how do I sound? Because I made some changes, but I don't know if it could fix anything. But I wonder, though, is it an earnings gap still? I bet it is. And I think that they're just being forced to pay for something that they shouldn't have to.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's just the way that this particular write-up was done. It sort of suggests that State Street Corps was actually complicit in this at first, which I was like, what? But yeah, this is ridiculous. Honest to God, are we really still going based off of this factless dogma that just to pay women and black people millions of dollars in earnings that they didn't earn?
I'm gonna point out, you know, this argument, this wage gap argument, is opposition to merit pay. It's opposition to shift in differentials. It's opposition to hazard pay. It's opposition to the pay it takes to persuade people to do dirty jobs, uncomfortable jobs, dangerous jobs. All of those things lure more men than women, because women are more often in a position where they don't have to tolerate discomfort. They don't have to deal with dirt in the job. They don't have to take jobs that are dangerous in order to support themselves, because they have somebody helping to support them. Whereas men are more often in the position of breadwinner of the family. They're responsible for the household income. They're responsible for the bulk of the mortgage, the electric bill, the grocery bill, everything. And so they have to take that risk if they want to maintain their family. And that doesn't even take into consideration how often men are ordered to earn more money to pay it to a woman who left him, took his children, and now cannot support them and herself, or at least claims to be unable. So for women to jump on this, for feminists to jump on this discrepancy in earnings and call it a wage gap, that's basically opposition to paying people who work harder or who take jobs that are more difficult and dangerous, disgusting, degrading at times. You know, that's basically opposition to merit pay. It's not so much that they're trying to elevate women, because employers aren't going to do that. They can't afford to do that. They can't afford to pay people for work they didn't do. The only thing they can do is not pay people for work they did when they worked harder than the people who are demanding equal pay.
What is it that the U.S. Department of Labor saw when they were auditing State Street Corps that made them believe, okay, they're paying less to black people? Like, were all those black people women? Like, what did they see in the data that made them say, okay, give these 315 people millions of dollars? That's what I want to, I got to read this article myself and search through this, because this makes no sense to me.
Well, one of the things that might be helpful is that it appears that most of the pay disparity dealt with people in managerial or vice president level positions. So women and minorities at the managerial and vice president level were the ones getting paid.
If they're dealing with 300 women in managerial positions, they have to be dealing with lower level management there as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been in a managerial position as a shift manager. That is glorified cheerleader for anybody who works in retail. They all know. It's considered a managerial position, and it can affect in some union-run jobs. It can affect what your benefits are and what rights you do or do not have and what rights other employees have in relation to you and so on. But if they're comparing all managerial positions, they may be comparing women in shift leader positions to men in higher management positions and saying, well, these women aren't getting paid enough. They're both in managerial positions. Why aren't they getting paid the same? It might not be the same managerial position. And then it's another one is they'll compare women in retail, going back to retail, they'll compare women who run smaller stores to men who run bigger stores and say, well, they're both running a store. Why is he getting paid more? If he's running a store that serves a larger number of customers and has a wider variety of merchandise, and he has more things to keep track of, more things to deal with, more vendors to deal with, and more local laws to take into consideration because of where he is, then he should get paid more. But Once again, feminist propaganda, as it's quite easy for them to say, well, they're both managers. Why aren't they getting paid the same? Equal work, right? Not always.
Yeah, that's okay. Now I'm starting to understand. I could see how that sort of thing comes out. And I guess, you know, I should have been more privy to, you know, the plethora of different reasons. Because, like, what with the wage gap, there's like 100 different reasons why there's a wage gap between men and women that doesn't have to deal with discrimination. So that makes sense. And I guess, you know, if it, even though it's the U.S. Department of Labor where, you know, all the where a lot of the nation's most brilliant mathematical minds go to congregate. I mean, you have the Federal Reserve where they still can't seem to understand that what they're doing now is the same reason why we had the financial collapse back in 2008. So that's government competence for you, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't excuse the company. I mean, if this is going to be a company that's going to be promoting a feminist standard, then they should uphold that feminist standard and live by that feminist standard, and they should elevate their women workers to the status of their men workers because they promote that idea, and it's hypocritical of them to not do it. But I can see why it's happening this way. They're basically doing what's normal, paying people for what they do as opposed to what politics says they do.
Am I still on the left, guys? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Brian?
Oh, shit.
How's that mono coming along?
Can you guys hear me at all? Hold on.
If you're talking, we can't hear you.
All right. I got to leave and come back in.
We may have,
how about now?
Oh, good. I was going to say, we lost our dog.
Oh! Wait, somebody said you're right winger now. Am I on the right now? Or are they just calling me a right-wing Nazi for the fun of it? Brian's good now. Stereo here. Okay, good.
Yay!
So, get this. This is fucking weird. Do you know how I had to do to fix my microphone to record in stereo? Is I had to change the microphone settings in the computer as well as on the microphone itself to mono. I swear to God, I had to make my microphone mono and make the change the channel within the Windows to mono so that it plays essentially in the center. The idea being that I guess microphones are all mono by default when they record, which makes sense because only one of them. So this is how you get it to play. So I have to make it mono so you guys get to hear me in stereo. So I guess this microphone is just too advanced because it's actually made for recording music and shit. So when you set it to stereo, you basically set instruments that you're plugging in, like guitars or keyboards or drums or whatever, to various channels so that they will be heard in different parts of the microphone, which has multiple channels within it. So anyway.
By the way, speaking of recording music, when are you going to drop that dope-ass gangster rap album that you've been talking to us
about? The mixtape is soon to be released. So yeah, it's MC. I'm trying to decide if I want to call it like MC Monoclops or you know,
the MC Patriarchy.
Yeah, ballin' with the Doge. You know, single ballin', but ballin' nonetheless.
I dropped my single ballin' check. Check out my new single. It's ballin'.
So, all right, so I'm good now. I'm going to go ahead and read the last story, unless there's any other opinions about this hilarious, ironic story about the Fearless Girl statue and how it put the State Street Incorporated in a position where they just had to shell out a bunch of money, perhaps needlessly, just so they could maintain their image of believing in equality for all, because they were the ones that essentially virtue signaled with a corporate-sponsored sculpture that appeared in front of an independent one as a means to change the context of the independently made sculpture.
All of this over a statue. Where have I seen this before? Oh, wait, yeah, on the other side of the aisle that you guys...
Yep. Okay. Are you still, we still good? Oh, it says, can you lower? I'll lower myself a bit. I guess I'm coming in too strong. Too strong. Max, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm good, dude.
Okay. All right. Last story. Make Video Games Apolitical Again by Mike J. Thank you, Mike. With the Bethesda Softworks published and Machine Games developed video game Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, Just mere weeks away from release, the marketing campaign is ramping itself up into overdrive. The sequel to the 2014 smash hit Wolfenstein: The New Order, which I paid for and got at home, and I actually liked it quite a bit, pits protagonist William B.J. Blazkowicz against a Nazi-controlled 1960s America. While the advertising for the first game was quite low-key and focused mostly on the horrors of living in a Nazi-occupied world, the marketing for Wolfenstein 2 seems to be squarely focused on exploiting current events and is about as subtle as a sledgehammer. If it's not gameplay clips where two Nazi soldiers discuss the ethics of punching a Nazi, it's the official Wolfenstein Twitter account tweeting out such things as hashtag no more Nazis and, quote, make America Nazi-free again, end quote. An obvious jab at President Donald Trump's campaign slogan. It's specifically the last part, which has drove some gamers to criticize the marketing team for needlessly politicizing Wolfenstein 2 in order to generate more hype. Naturally and expectedly, anyone with a critical word about the game or the way it's being advertised has been branded as a Nazi across the internet. This shouldn't be surprising, no, it's not, to anyone, as after the last U.S. presidential election, the label Nazi has been applied to anyone expressing opinions that run counter to the regressive mindset, or even centrists, because centrists get the bullet too. It's uncertain at the moment how heavy-handed the game will be with references to the current political climate, but if we're lucky, Wolfenstein 2 will be much like its predecessor, low on propaganda and high on fun. I did really enjoy the New Order. I thought it was a fun game, and for what it was, and I was hoping that this new one, the new Colossus, will be more of the same. So, as far as the way they're marketing the game, I don't really care. I'm completely ambivalent to what they're doing. I find it interesting that as much as people seem to dislike the America, Make America Great Again slogan, a lot of people are using it and appropriating it for various things. A lot of people. People who are opposed, or people who are indifferent, or people who are just really smart business people that know that using the campaign slogan is a good way to get people's attention. They know that controversy and, like, kicking up shit is a good way to get people talking about your product. So, in my opinion, it would appear that, at least right now, Bethesda Softworks and Machine Games, they're just like, this is going to sell the game because it's going to get people talking about the game. And I think it's actually quite brilliant if that's all that they're doing. So, I mean, it rolls off the tongue, Life Monster said. I mean, yeah, but the make America Nazi free again is, you know, that's, I don't really care about that. And in fact, that's another way of saying, at least if I lived in this, you know, fictional future, it would be another way of saying make America great again. So I personally don't have a problem with it. I think that it's good marketing. I know that there are some people that are unhappy and they think that Bethesda is becoming like a social justice, you know, company and they're virtue signaling or whatever. I haven't seen any of that, so I'm not going to, because maybe some of the other clips where the Nazi soldiers are discussing the ethics of punching a Nazi or whatever, maybe there's some of that in there, but I haven't seen any evidence of it myself. So the way I see it, they're just trying to sell the game. And I think that it's important, while we understand that while we've been embroiled in this culture war, because this is definitely what's happening, there are people who we used to like, admire, follow, you know, in the entertainment medium, in games journalism, in comics, in all faces of pop culture that have essentially come forward and freaked out about all of this Nazi harassing women, white supremacy, whatever you want to call it, going on the internet as well as in real life. But it's important to keep things in perspective and try to look at everything on an individual case-by-case basis and not freak out or get upset until they actually do something that is upsetting. Kind of like when Dan Harmon went on his crazy-ass rant about Nazis on his podcast, that was when it confirmed for me, okay, this guy's a bit unhinged. So, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't keep watching Rick and Morty if you like the show, but just, you know, recognize that, yeah, this guy's got issues. So I don't really care. I think that if you guys have been watching this stuff, just make sure that Bethesda's actually doing the thing that, you know, they, that some people are accusing them of doing. And at the same time, look at the other side, because I'm sure there are SJWs that are also angry at Bethesda for capitalizing on this to sell games, or they are trivializing something that they think is very, very serious. And again, I don't see any evidence of that. But I wanted to bring this up because it is related to video games, and in particular, it's pretty Gamergate related, I think, at least in terms of putting things into perspective. So does anybody else have any thoughts?
Yeah, don't care. Where's Elder Scrolls 6?
Are they going to make one?
Yeah, of course they are. They said, yeah, it'd be three a couple times. Todd Howard has said, yeah, of course we're working on it. We just have a couple of other IPs that nobody cares about coming out before it. But yeah, I suppose, like, if it's a creative work and now the company wants to try and drive attention to their particular products, more power to them. Even though, like, look, obviously we agree that the conversation regarding who is a Nazi and who is not in current political discourse is so toxic, you know, it could probably fuel an entire nuclear power plant. But look, as long as, you know, the game is more on top of just giving people fun and not trying to push any particular political agenda, I'm sure this will all blow over. And if it's not, don't buy it.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, again, just, you know, try to keep things in perspective. I actually think that if they're using this to sell games, and they do, bully for them. Use the weapon of your enemies to, or use the thing that pisses off, you know, far left socialists like capitalism to use the controversy to sell copies. I think it's brilliant and actually kind of funny. Okay, Hannah, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to point out, I don't think that they're going to sell games with this marketing tactic, because we've already established from the comic book controversies regarding SJW's influence on comic books that the people that are demanding an SJW influence on various media aren't the ones who buy that media. They're trying to control a media because it's popular, and they feel like, oh, hey, you know, this is something that we can use to influence people. And that's, they're going to end up, they're doing the same thing that Marvel is doing. They're trying to market to people who are never going to buy their product, and they're doing it at the expense of their relationship with the people who always have. Mm-hmm. That's really bad business practice. Well, that's all I got about it.
I don't know if they're actually taking... The thing is, though, in this case, I'm not sure that they're actually taking a stand. I think they're just using what's going on to essentially, you know, relate their game's universe to real life. And maybe they're even, like, making fun of the absurdity because, you know, according to this, there's a clip where two Nazi soldiers are discussing the ethics of punching a Nazi, which is ironic in and of itself. That could be a statement, you know, with a context, like they could be criticizing Antifa, who goes around calling everybody fascists while acting like fascists. So, you know, these Nazis are discussing the ethics of punching a Nazi, but it also could be coming from the opposite perspective where, you know, people who are perceived to be Nazis are also the ones, at least according to SJWs, that don't think you should punch Nazis. So, and most of the time, it's not just Nazis doing that, it's just free speech advocates that are saying violence is not, you know, the answer. So I guess it's just hard to say. I understand where you're coming from. I could see how it could harm their sales, too.
Yeah, there's another way that could harm their sales as well. And I'm gonna equate this to in anime terms. I can't remember the name for it, but there's, and this happens with games too. I think it's called localization. I might be wrong. Mm. Where they translate a game that, or an anime that obviously was created in a different language originally, and they replace the dialogue with English. They dub it, or they subtitle it. But instead of replacing it with English for what was actually said, or when slang terms and local, like, colloquialisms are used, English for the equivalent of that colloquialism, they replace it with something entirely different because they don't think that the people that are going to be buying the game or the anime in English.
Yeah, they're not going to get it.
They think they can't handle that particular, I don't know, thought process or whatever. And it's a lot of times it turns out, and they'll put modern, you know, current events and stuff into these games that are like, this is time sensitive. This is going to be, it's going to go on for a while, and then it's going to resolve, or it's going to die, one or the other. Like, people are going to just stop doing it, or it's going to get run into the ground. It's going to become embarrassing for the people that are doing it, and so on. And that's going to be permanent. That's going to be forever in their game. And I've seen discussions about this in game forums and in anime forums where, you know, they stuck something in English in a game or an anime that 20 years down the line, people are going to be like, what the hell is that?
Oh, yeah, they do that.
The one example off the top of my head I can think of is, I think in the first episode of Inuyasha, they put the word hella. Like, mm-hmm. nobody says that. People already weren't saying that by the time it published.
Oh, yeah.
And it looked really stupid, and there's a lot of times with that. This is going to be like that.
Yeah, I remember when Sailor Moon was first localized to the States, dubbed, and it was put on the, just regular, like, Saturday morning television. And I think Sailor Moon said, "You're tripping" to somebody. And I was like, what? And that was like my first thought. I was like, no, there's no fucking way she said that in Japan, that they even know what that means. It was pretty hilarious. That is, and that's actually just like the least egregious of those crimes. Like prison, I think it's called prison school. There's a scene where a character makes a reference directly to Gamergate. And it was done like a couple of years ago. And many video games that are localized include stuff, references that the people of Japan wouldn't even get, and clearly wasn't what they actually said, but they were trying to find a way to make it relatable to us over here for whatever reason, the people who were essentially doing the translating. So
yeah, it's almost like they think experiences that people have in Japan are not this, you know, human experiences that people in the West would understand as human experiences. It's very insulting to both cultures, really. And and I'm not saying that's what this exactly what this is, but if they're doing that, it's going to end up, it's not going to play well in the future. It's not going to last. And they're going to look like idiots. They're going to have egg on their face in the long run.
But what about tentacle porn, Hannah? I still don't understand that shit.
Well, you got to do some history, Max. You got to do some.
Obviously,
you got to do some research.
Obviously, you're reading the same authors I read.
Sure, I'll do the research on that right now. I'll get on a walk for sure. Thanks a lot, Brian.
But the way I see it, ultimately, if it turns out that Bethesda, which actually wouldn't surprise me, I think Bethesda is a bit lefty, SJWE. I think there are people in their company, like, maybe not to the degree that Ubisoft is, but, you know, I think that they are kind of in that direction. If it turns out that they're doing this stuff purposefully to choose a side or virtue signal or whatever, we'll find out when the game is released how much of it is in there and how ham-fisted it is. And I think that, yeah, it will hurt their business, because the fact is, the people, if they're pandering, the people they're pandering to don't buy their shit. They just go on Twitter and say, look, I found this clip online of some journalist who spent, 5 days getting through the first level, but look at this reference to the people who I hate / the, you know, Christians / whatever group, outgroup X. I love this. This is the best thing ever. This is my life. This is everything. Oh, my God. Look, guys, look. But none of them will buy it. And so it will hurt them, and they will go the way of Marvel. And the thing is, gamers don't forget. You do that shit, and that will, like, you won't just hurt the sales of this game. You will hurt the sales of all of your games, because gamers won't forget. You know, that pandering shit does not work, and the audience doesn't buy it. They just don't. That's true.
Billfish. Sorry.
What? Oh.
I said Phil Fish.
Yeah, Phil Fish, right. But I remember what his game that shit's gone. Like, everybody's talking about Cuphead now.
I know.
It's because it's awesome.
Bye-bye, Phil. We don't miss you.
No, fuck him. Anyway, so is there... Let me think here. Is there anything else that anyone wants to say about this particular story?
Fuck Nazis.
Like, vaginally or anally or...
Whatever is most painful, Brian.
Okay.
In the ear.
In the ear hole?
You were doing it in the ear.
Family Guy reference to anybody who doesn't get that.
In the current ear? All right, well, anyway. I guess we'll take us out. Thanks, guys, for joining us. We didn't do too bad. It's 6:15, so we were gone for an hour and 15 minutes. So that's pretty good. We're going to go ahead and get into the after show, where I'm going to be reading from Hillary Clinton's book, speaking of pandering, her book, What Happened?, where she asks the question that everyone knows the answer to except her, and we'll we'll try to have fun with that. So if you guys want to join us for some literary aids in the after show, be sure to become a patron at www.patreon.com/honeybadgerradio. Again, if you want to get access to all of the stuff, in case we lose the tiny little corner of YouTube that we currently already have, then go to badgerfeed.com so that you can catch us wherever we're making anything, anywhere, ever. So with that said, I want to thank my co-hosts, Mike, Max, Hannah, and you guys in the audience for working with me while I deal with my weird microphone issues that make no fucking sense. And I guess with that said, in Châtelet Buckos...